because one that I'd seen, which I quite liked, was the Dulux paint scratch and sniff collection.
Welcome to the Media Week podcast, the podcast made for media people by media people. Don't worry, we're not your CEOs just yet. We're your common media folk in the weeds of the day-to-day. Each episode, we'll share opinions on hot topics in the media world, along with some bants to keep you going on a Friday afternoon. So who's in the room? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis, Jack from Craft.
M'lady.
Fuki from Wavemaker.
Hello.
And our not-so-newest addition, who has managed to cling on for another two episodes, it's Charlie 2.0 from Show Hero.
By the skin of my teeth.
I wouldn't... Are you going to let her talk to you like that?
Not for long.
Just kidding, Charlie.
You've got to stand up to bullies, okay?
There you go.
We don't plan on getting rid of you just yet. In today's episode, we share our views about another tech giant scandal and discuss how brands continue to tap into cultural moments with our favourite April Fool's teasers. But first... get your tickets, get your tickets. That's right, it's Media 360 on the 21st to the 22nd of May in Brighton. The early bird deadline for tickets is this week, so get purchasing, gang.
I like you as a ticket tout.
In the traditional media landscape, it's the beginning of the end for the BBC. As referenced in Campaign, our beloved BBC is planning to introduce advertising on its radio and podcast content via third-party platforms for the first time. The broadcaster is allegedly working on proposals to introduce ads in audio when streamed on third-party service providers, as I've just said, such as Spotify, Apple Music, so on. So does this actually mark the beginning of the end for the BBC?
I mean, there's allegedly it's got to be in like italicised bold capital letters there, surely. Like, is it actually happening?
The BBC actually reported on this. Okay. It was on Radio 4 the other day.
Okay.
I think it's a very tough one for the BBC because I feel like they always receive backlash. So they either, people are like, oh no, we don't want to pay the licence fee, and other people will be like, oh no, we don't want ads. So how exactly are you expecting the BBC to continue to make money to fund any of the programming?
Yeah.
So for me, I'm like, fair dues. Everyone else is doing it, especially if they're going to be kind of utilising this, like as you say, on Spotify, Apple Music or anything like that, where people are getting their podcasts. But I do think it could be seen as the beginning of the end, but I feel like it might be just actually the BBC changing their model to keep them fit for purpose, because it's very difficult to carry on doing what they're doing. The only potential drawback that I can see is a risk to the diversity of programming. I think that's one thing that BBC has always had for them, is that because they are funded by the licence fee, they are able to do what they think is important, do what they think is necessary for the public. But obviously, if they're now funded by ads, they might start to crowd around the kind of content.
You don't want it to be the History Channel.
Yeah, exactly.
What's interesting is if plans move forward, they say that ads will appear on the higher profile content such as The Archers and Desert Island Disc. Those are Radio 4 programmes, by the way.
There's going to be a lot of very annoyed boomers.
They might be putting ads in front of the wrong audience right now. I don't think those people will be ready to take ads on that platform.
They're not going to be receptive to ads on the Beeb, are they?
Exactly.
They want good old pure Beeb.
Yeah.
And that's what's interesting. I'm saying that because I actually listen to Radio 4, so I listen to these programmes.
Do you?
Yeah.
There's Island Discs.
Is that when you got your oval?
And The Archers.
That's Emmerdale, isn't it?
No.
Oh.
In audio, podcasts are dead. Just kidding, we're still on air, thank goodness. But Google Podcasts are not. In April, the Google Podcasts app has shut down in the US as users migrate data to YouTube Music or another service. Podcasts can still be downloaded but not streamed after the shutdown date. The global discontinuation will come into effect as of June this year. What do we think of that?
It's kind of like when they just gave up on, what was their version of Facebook that was rubbish? Circles, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, sometimes Google just, they don't cut it. So, like, they've kind of just gone, all right, we'll do it. Like, because basically all the podcasts, apart from this one, are available on YouTube. You don't want to see us. You don't want to see what we look like.
To be honest, I think that's good. The one thing that I'm thinking about that is that I like that Google are doing stuff like this and they're not afraid to fail. They're like, okay, we tried this, it didn't work. But also it doesn't make sense for them kind of combining it into this YouTube Music, because I was looking into this in my mind. I'm like, YouTube Music, they're forcing it every time. Every time I go onto YouTube, they're like, oh, do you want to upgrade to YouTube Music, YouTube Premium? And I'm always like, no, 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 skip, skip, skip. However, when you look at the membership data and the subscription data, it is steadily trending upwards. And I think this will be another bolster to those numbers.
If you look on like YouGov or TGI, YouTube Music is incredibly high. It's just because we're a bunch of media bubble wankers. We're like, oh, Spotify. It's like the rest of the country. It's still big, but it's not as big as, you know, things like the Amazon ones and the YouTube ones. So
yeah, I think in numbers, I think it's now sitting at 100 million subscribers. Spotify, for comparison, is at 263 million subscribers. And that's paid for premium subscribers, not the free ones. So I think it's literally playing the slow game and they are really starting to build that audience. And this will just be another reason for people to jump into that YouTube premium, YouTube Music audience.
They'll get me eventually.
Yeah, we'll be there.
In finance, the ASA bans Nationwide Building Society ads after complaints claiming that the ads running across TV, radio and press were misleading. Nationwide Building Society apparently had, in fact, reduced and closed a number of branches, which, for those that know the ads, are all talking about how they haven't closed any branches.
Is it haven't or is it aren't going to? And have they closed anything since they put the ad out? Because that's a big semantics.
I was going to say, these are all technicalities.
Yeah.
And I will stress that the complaints came from direct competitors. So there's a dirty game being played here.
Yeah, it's not the reason why I thought those ads would be banned. Because they were nicely sort of edgy. But
I really liked them.
Yeah, I thought they were really good. Really good.
Yeah, I did have a look at the one. I'm not sure they were all banned. I think some of them were.
It's just the one that was made reference.
Because we'd referenced some of the other ones in a previous episode where we were speaking about the, I can't even remember now, but we loved it. And then so I think with this one, I think it was referenced to like, we haven't closed any or we don't close branches. And then they have closed branches. So
tell the truth in your ads.
Yeah.
Sometimes, maybe.
Yeah, I think thankfully no one outside of media will really realise that it's gone. Otherwise it really just it discredits their entire thing. It's like, we don't do this. Well, you do. And now you've taken your ad down for it. So it's,
Yeah, it's a shame. I like those ads though.
Mm. Yeah.
Once again, the tech giants are wrapped up in another media legal scandal. That's right, Meta has allegedly granted Netflix access to Facebook users' direct messages for years, with Meta receiving millions of ad revenue from Netflix.
It's worth noting that that was refuted quite strongly by Andy Stone, who's the Meta communications guy. He said essentially what it allows them to do is to send messages directly from the Netflix app, and that they're arguing that that was what the piece of code was. However, is that entirely the case? Remains to be seen.
Who's sending messages to Facebook from Netflix?
That's what, like, I'm trying to understand, right?
Yeah, I guess like if you're watching something and you're like, you know, halfway through, oh, this bit's amazing, send a message to your aunt or whoever. But I mean, I certainly wouldn't be doing that.
But it doesn't have a messaging function though, Netflix, right?
Well, it allegedly does. Not that I've seen it, and I'm not sure. I imagine it's probably through your phone rather than anything on your TV. But I'm not sure how used it was.
Because I feel like Netflix, everyone always kind of goes mad about like Netflix's data capabilities, but then when they actually, you know, when they actually started up their advertising, you couldn't really do much other than demographics.
No.
There's something about this news article where I was like, is this actually breaking news that Meta's somehow given some other company some data?
It's giving Cambridge Analytica all over. Yeah.
Is it breaking news or is it broken news?
Broken news.
How profound of us.
They're in hot water elsewhere, though, aren't they? So it was the, I think it's load. So Apple, Meta, and Google are being investigated by the EU for breaches of the Digital Markets Act.
Of course.
So this is the one they brought in to look after. Basically, I think it was like six of the bigger tech companies. But the one that Meta are being looked at for is their subscriptions for no ads bit. Have you seen that? So you can pay a subscription to get no ads. But the subscription is £10 a month, so obviously no one is going to do that. But what it means, it allows them to claim that users have a choice. Users have a choice of whether they want to see ads or not. Now, obviously, no one's actually going to pay that just to get no ads. But then they can keep tracking and collecting all this data as a result of it. So they say they've done this in the spirit of the guidelines, but I mean, maybe just read between the lines.
The spirit of the guidelines. Yeah.
I'd really,
that old refrain.
I'd really love to see the subscription uptake.
Like, yeah, they definitely
won't
be releasing
that. What are the numbers
here? Yeah. I'd also like to see the output of it, like the whole kind of like, you know, influencers and, you know, sponsored stuff, like what exactly would be stripped out on that ad-free one? And what would still kind of get through? That's what I'm interested in seeing.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Because I don't think, I know TikTok also trialed somewhere an ad-free version, but again, that was only actual ad. You can't stop if someone does a promotion within a video that isn't recognized as an ad, then that can't be removed. But they had to do it because they got fined £390 million of pocket change, euros, I think it was. So they needed to do something.
Damn.
That's what my pocket change looks like.
Yeah. But it seems to be that there's every week is another sort of story of big tech having some sort of fine. So don't know whether we're moving away from the sort of Reagan Thatcherite idea of companies know best to actually, maybe they don't. And maybe there should be a little bit more of a scrutiny over them.
We can't get into this.
If we start getting into like the red tape debate and stuff, I don't know, but... Tell you what, you should listen to, you know, we're talking about BBC podcasts, listen to The Gatekeepers, which is the new Jamie Bartlett series about social media and the sort of journey it's taken to being sort of politically
Stephen
controlling.
Bartlett.
No, not Stephen Bartlett, Jamie Bartlett.
Who's that?
He's like a journalist for Radio 4.
Okay, phew.
Stephen Bartlett's non-Huel.
Yeah, I mean, not once has Jamie tried to flog me Huel, so... Just try it.
All right, let me see. I like the sound of that.
Well, in other tech giant news, Google is currently in discussion about a generative AI feature being charged behind a paywall, meaning that AI-powered search features would be potentially added to its premium subscription services. As referenced in the FT, Google is not working on an ad-free search experience, but will continue to build new capabilities to enhance its subscription offerings.
I mean, that smacks of desperation, doesn't it?
Because
like you've got like ChatGPT are opening stuff up all the time and using that to feed their model, while Google are going, "Ours is just as good. You've just got to pay for it." Like, yeah. I don't know, people won't do that.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll subscribe to Meta before I do that.
Yeah, same. Actually.
It's only going to grow more and more. So OpenAI have partnered or in some capacity with Microsoft. They're opening a $100 billion. Data center, which is just an enormous.
I can't fathom that.
No, yeah, it's ridiculous.
What, I don't even know what $1 billion.
I don't know what a data center is.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to help with their AI training, but it's unfathomably expensive as well. So I think like Amazon spent $51 million training one data set. That's how much it costs just to train up one little bit of their. So it's the figures behind all this are enormous.
It's a depressing amount of money, isn't it?
And you've got to think of the power consumption as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like...
Just get some people.
Yeah.
In other AI news, Amazon Fresh Just Walk Out technology has been revealed to allegedly be entirely reliant on humans. Apparently, 700 of every 1,000 sales had to be reviewed by a manual human check.
Was it? Hang on. So there were some things that they were tracking then?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was every single sale was being like tracked by someone.
70% of them, yes.
Someone in like a data center.
So the majority.
It's like basically a battery farm.
Yeah, literally.
Oh, mate.
It's all a bit...
It's Black Mirror.
Yeah, because I generally, I'd heard stuff like, oh yeah, they use like weighted shelves and, you know, there's cameras in there, but it's just, I just didn't think it was genuinely cameras and other people just watching you.
What else isn't real?
Yeah.
What else isn't real? It's shattered my worldview now. Like.
Well, we were talking about it in the middle of the week and you said, what if ChatGPT is just a load of people Googling stuff?
Yeah, 1,000 people in Singapore just Googling answers really, really quickly.
I mean... They must be damn good at Google, that's all I'd say.
Right, they're the best.
We just have to go with it at this point, because we don't know what's up. I don't know what's real anymore.
I'm going to get a job working for ChatGPT, it's fine. I'm just going to Google stuff for them.
Whole whistleblower.
I was going to say, I'd love to have that job, like the Amazon Fresh job, like, you know, nosing on who's picked up what product.
Do you check your like passing bank account afterwards as well? And just what if they were like, oh, I reckon that was two Kit Kats. He was like, it was one Kit Kat, man.
But the only thing on this one, is this India only or is this applied across all Amazon?
I think it was across
freshers?
It was across all of them, but it was a team of 1,000 people in India, whose job it was just to observe. And
that's insane. Damn.
The thing is, like, but who reported that again? Because I don't
Business
know.
Business Insider.
Oh.
Because I think they're closing it. They're closing it. They're like, nah, it's not working. So.
Or have they seen enough?
Maybe.
Well, they're basically saying, okay, well, if the people buy the concept, then... Because have you ever bought something from one of those stores?
No,
it's very unsettling.
It's like you feel like you're shoplifting.
Mm.
And you're conscious of the cameras as well. Like, trying to look inconspicuous, even though...
Yeah, I feel like that's what I would do. I'd be like, look real natural. I'm picking this up and I'm paying for it.
Now you've got to make sure you make their life easier. Show it to the camera.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go.
Six Kit Kats.
For the listeners at home, we're miming this for you. But,
Well, that wraps up Newsflash. On to the main section. So, how do brands these days continue to stay relevant by tapping into cultural moments? April Fool's Day is an annual custom that brands have historically tapped into to drive awareness and relevancy. But are they still doing it, and are they doing it well? Have you seen any April Fool's campaigns, activations that prompted some interest?
I feel like they might be doing it better. I don't know why, but it just feels like in the last few years, I'm seeing a lot more of it. So we're starting to tap back into that kind of humour. I'm pretty sure that's something we said at the beginning of the year, that humour is going to make a huge comeback as well this year. So I think as you're seeing like millennials and Gen Zs kind of get into a lot of these decision-making positions, especially within advertising and marketing, they are doing the things that they like to see. So we are seeing a lot more of brands just being a little tongue-in-cheek, taking the mick a little bit, being very easy breezy. And it's, to be honest, I think it's driving a lot of relevance for them.
My question is April Fool's considered a cultural moment these days?
I like playing tricks on people that I love on April Fool's Day. But I'm kind of like, it's one thing like, you know, calling up your parents and having them on about something. And it's kind of another about like Aldi being like, oh, look how funny we are. Like I can appreciate why like brands want to do it, but I would question whether it's for like LinkedIn bants. Do we know if people actually respond well to it? I guess like some people quite like sort of the cursed inter-brand banter sort of thing, don't they? Mm-hmm. But I find it a little bit cringy sometimes.
Well, do we have any examples? So I know that Just Stop Oil announced a sponsorship deal with Gorilla Glue. Charlie, I know you shared that one with us. So.
Yeah, that was a good one. There was a couple other. Well, the Audi one you referenced was the Haggis Stars ice cream.
Mm. Interesting.
Which I thought was actually quite good. But that's
I think to your point, I think you might be right, because it's not. I don't think it's for every brand. And like, I think some of them can do it kind of well, but to the point of like playing jokes. I think the one that I actually really enjoyed, which is less about a brand, was, did you see, was it on This Morning? Where it was Dermot O'Leary and is it Alison Hammond, I think he was doing it with? And they were doing an interview with someone and there was a really expensive vase. It was all there. This older woman was like, oh my God, this vase, it's like $40,000, blah, blah, blah. And then he like trips and falls and it breaks. And Alison thinks like he's actually broken the thing, but the woman's in on it. And everyone's heart stops a little bit. And then it's like, ha, ha, ha. That was quite entertaining. Did enjoy that. That's a bit of a prank.
I thought that the Sainsbury's double-decker trolley example, I was a little bit like, is that the best you got?
It's a bit flat, isn't
like,
it?
Also, because he lives, I'm not filling two double-decker trolleys like that.
Yeah. No.
What do you mean? Yeah, and a basket.
Filling the basket, yeah. That was funny, though, because like, Audi were clearly having a bit of a time of it, because they did another one as well. Love Island, as in like the aisle.
Okay. The middle aisle, the middle aisle at Aldi.
They basically announced they were going to do like this kind of Love Island type show where people find in love in like a supermarket aisle, which is like, I was like, But then they released a sort of statement after that was like kind of announcing it was an April Fool's joke. But with a statement saying that the idea had been carefully reviewed within the business, but it was not shown to be legal. And to quote, although we give off the vibe that we love court cases, they're incredibly costly and going forward with this plan would not be within our best interest, I actually found quite
funny.
Yeah. Like, so I suppose like if you get it right and you're sort of knowing about it, It's just like, you need to kind of go for it, I suppose.
Is it serving its purpose, though? Are these kind of gimmicky, funny pranks serving its purpose by driving relevancy for the brands? Or are they one-off, forgotten?
I reckon they are a bit, because one that I'd seen, which I quite liked, was the Dulux paint scratch and sniff collection. Like, you know, I'm no homeowner. I don't need to be using Dulux to paint anything. So I would never be talking about that brand. But when I saw that, I thought, that is funny, actually. And I'd love to try it.
So, Willy Wonka vibes, isn't it?
I mean, scratch and sniff is also just...
It's
like,
just a funny phrase, isn't it?
That's a hilarious phrase.
And the other one that we shared was the Porsche phone case.
Yeah, that rubbish that case that someone made where you put your lipstick or Willy Balm in it or something.
I couldn't get
Do you know what I mean by
it.
Saying that?
No.
Put my lipstick in my pocket.
There was some, I don't know, it was some designer, and they made this phone case that apparently was very popular, I imagine, with the TikTok crowd, and Porsche sort of ripped it off and had a phone case where you clip your key in there. So I thought that was quite clever.
It didn't make sense to me. I just thought, what, so it's a phone case.
I think it's in reference to the other bit, maybe makes it make sense.
There was one like particularly cursed one, which I was like, I wish I hadn't seen this, but it was Anne Summers and Marmite doing the fake new limited edition Marmite kissable massage oil.
Ooh.
And I was like, I love Marmite, right? But like, I don't know about that.
Did you see that one in the wild? Were you served that ad?
No. If you do find a way to get hold of it, let us know in Media and on how you get on.
Yeah, use Jack10 for your discount code.
My name doesn't work so well there for that. It's not good.
I think, in my opinion, they're all, you know, well and good and ha 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 for a funny 5 minutes. But I think what would be really clever is if, you know, a brand really thought about how they could kind of use the opportunity to then create a bit of a series to drive kind of engagement or ongoing engagement and awareness. But how they do it, I don't know. I just haven't seen a brand where I think that could be leveraged long term.
I do know what you mean. I think probably the closest is probably that Lidl Aldi, that they are the ones who are consistently funny. So yeah. Rather than like, you know, Dulux, you don't do anything funny all year.
Mm.
Granted, that was a funny activation there. But if you're able to tie that in with your brand personality more regularly, then you could probably see a little bit of a better kind of return on that.
It's so hard to kind of see the wood from the trees with this because we spend so much time thinking about this stuff.
Mm.
It's hard to put yourself in a, you know, like a normal punter's shoes and be like, you know, what do people act? I wonder if you stopped anyone on the street whether they would have seen half of this stuff.
Mm.
But I guess for those who have, you know, maybe it would just give them a little bit more standout. I mean, the Marmite and Anne Summers one is really going to stay with me, I think.
I think you've got to do it right as well, because, I mean, yeah. It's not April Fool's necessarily, but in terms of cultural moments as a whole, one of the worst things that I've ever seen was when one of the Kardashians teamed up with Pepsi and did that ad where it was around Black Lives Matter protests going on. And the ad was, there was a protest, there was loads of tension, and she diffused everything by giving the police officer a can of Pepsi. What a terrible day to have eyes that was.
That wasn't an April Fool, though.
They
did that, like...
Yeah, they just thought that was a cultural moment of significance, so they thought that would be the best execution, which is a bit peak.
Got one other one that I was just like, again, it was like, ugh. Do you see that EasyJet Holidays sort of announced that they were going to rebrand themselves as EasyJet Hollybobs?
I like that one.
I mean, just the word Hollybobs is
so
like,
cute.
Because it's like, they, you know, the Hollybobs get searched however many million times on TikTok. So they said it was literally a tweet. Whether you're looking for a summer Hollybob with your huns, a crimbo Hollybob with the hubby and Familam, or a spring Hollybob with Bay. I was scrolling through this and I said with Bay, I read that as like BAE Systems, like the weapons
bay. Systems.
Yeah, a spring Hollybob with a weapons arms dealer. Bay Systems.
That could really, that could be a thing to just soften their...
Yeah, rebrand
brand.
Them.
Perception.
Bay Systems. Yeah, I mean, not
some new
quite.
Creative. Make it pink.
Make it pink. Fortunately, EasyJet Holidays haven't done that, and they don't have just the Hollybob to make your friends jelly. As they say, oh God,
no.
But they've gone. They've. They're trying to get me with that. They're like trying to annoy me.
Yeah,
and I respect. Working. I respect that.
So in summary then, we do think that brands do have a role to play in smaller cultural moments like that, but it's doing it well and doing it that fits with the brand personality.
Yeah. There are people listening to this who are probably going, you're all full of shit, like, and have an interested view on this. So like, if you want to submit your anonymous opinion, tell us we're right or wrong, preferably the former, you can send it in to Media Anon and we'll read it out next week.
Ring, 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 ring. Hello, Media Anon. So we have actually got a couple today. So the first one, I'll read it out for you. It's not a Media Anon. So not a Media Anon or an update on something I've submitted previously, but I wanted to share something that might be useful to the person who submitted about feeling lonely in London.
Love this.
Yeah, no, I love
that's
that.
That's great.
Thank
yeah.
you. Nice community building.
Let's see what it is first.
There's an app called Meetup that I use to find groups based on a whole bunch of interests that they can go along to and meet other people, such as walks, meditation, yoga, book clubs, acting, all sorts. So the app is called Meetup, and apparently it's pretty good. So if anyone else is still feeling lonely in London,
that's really
fantastic.
Nice.
It's and wholesome.
For the person who originally shared the Media Anon, let us know if you do use the app and that it's worked.
Follow your journey.
We love that.
Are there advertising opportunities on it? Let's monetize that.
We've got your hat on.
Yeah. Never off, mate.
All right, we've got another one. So the next one we have is, without making things too political.
Oh, God.
Here we go.
Oh,
I've been asked to work on a brand that outside of work I am boycotting. Is it okay to raise this ethical dilemma with my boss?
We had a very similar one.
Quite a while ago now, though.
Yeah.
I wonder how our thoughts and feelings
I think, yes. I think if you've got a fundamental issue with working with them, then you can approach your boss and go, hey, look, this is where I am. I'd really appreciate it if I can move on to a different account. I think that's fine.
Go with the solution, though. Go and have like a tout about and see if there's like someone else who fancies, who's got your opposite values to you.
But could you actually do that? Because if that's a brand that I'm boycotting, then that's me basically being like, well, someone else is still going to do the work anyway, so I'm going to help find that person. I'm not sure if I could do that. Mm. And then my other question is, if you flip reverse that, if you are now the boss and your employee or your someone on your team comes to you and says, look, I don't want to work on that, what are you doing?
You never know. There might be an easy solution. And I think raising that question in an open forum, you know, there may be someone else who hasn't worked on that kind of account or is working on a smaller account, is ready to take on a bigger one, that then it might resolve itself.
I don't think you should openly say, oh, outside of work, I am boycotting the brand in question. But obviously go in with, it doesn't align with my values. I've spoken to Tom across the floor who is keen to be involved in this. We've agreed, if we have your approval, that we do a swap.
Solutions.
Yeah. What if they say no?
Well,
what if they're like, no, to be honest, the commercials don't line up. Tom's a senior exec, you're an exec, so the commercials aren't lining up in terms of what happens now?
Well, first of all, the person should have thought about that before it got to the commercials not being lined up. But if boss says that, then you go back and say, well, is there other options that we, or suggestions that you may have that will make this a working solution? Because nice. Your boss is also responsible for your morale and output at work to a degree.
Yeah.
So they have to keep you as happy.
Yeah, also, I mean, people move around on accounts all the time. I mean, I don't know how big the agency this person is at, but like, you know, there's usually a bit of wiggle room. So just whatever you do, just don't go in and like kick off and be like, oh, I can't even believe we work on this. Or, you know, whether it's an oil giant or a bookie, or I'm trying to think of another one that you might. I once had SeaWorld.
Oh,
I was like, I can't do SeaWorld. I was like an exec though. So they were like, yeah, cool. You wouldn't actually be much.
Well, that wraps up today's episode. If you like what you heard, like and subscribe, and we will see you next time.
I love this transformation into Matt Berry.